Welcome, 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 Housers, to another episode of On the Way Home. I'm your host, Michael Braithwaite, and I am from Blue Door. And Blue Door is our organization up in the north part of the GTA, operating in York, Durham, and Peel, doing amazing work around helping people realize that right to housing by providing emergency, transitional, and longer-term supportive housing, as well as a construction social enterprise that ends the cycle of poverty for people and puts them into well-paying and meaningful work in construction. And as well, of course, hey, if people come in to want to keep their housing, they have to remain healthy. So we link, we have all sorts of programs that link individuals to healthcare to keep them healthy, to move forward in their path of housing. That and much, much more. There's a QR code on your screen. Just use your camera to connect to Blue Door or go to bluedoor.ca. Listen, we do this podcast in partnership with the Canadian Alliance and Homelessness, a powerful national organization, a national voice in the ear of government, doing great advocacy work, great training work, and much, much more. They do a huge national conference each year. Next year it will be in Ottawa. Check out all they do at caeh.ca. We are so glad to have them as partners. This week, we have a power duo as our guests. We're talking about the intersectional feminist housing agenda, and we need your help around this. It was put together by some really incredible partners. So today, we're joined by Khalood Beg, and Khalood is the Director of Policy and Community Engagement and the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network, and was one of our first guests on this podcast on the way home, a powerful voice doing incredible work. And she is joined by Andrea Reamer, who Andrea's a survivor of public service. So was a Vancouver city councilor. Vancouver, as most our listeners know, is a city that is very, very challenged by the lack of deeply affordable housing and an increase of homelessness over time. So she spent some time with government and currently teaches at UBC's School of Public Policy and Global Affairs. And we'll hear today about a wonderful podcast that she leads. And you can tell by her setup right away that she's a podcaster. She, They, Us. It's a podcast about the housing crisis facing households led by women and gender diverse people within Canada's larger housing crisis. They join up me today to talk about the work, how it all came together for the intersectional feminist housing agenda, what led to that, what it is, what their hopes are. We talk about why it's important to use a gender lens when we're looking at housing and homelessness. We talk about who's all involved, the partners, what their hopes are for the future with government at all levels, what success looks like in the future, and how you could get involved, which is very important. And it's really easy by going to the website, and they make it so simple for your voice to be heard and for real impact to be had. We talk a little bit about how at the end of the day, the hope is to give some real teeth and accountability to housing as a human right. This is such important, impactful work. They're leading this. It's an important voice that is often unheard, and we need to change that up as we work through this crisis. I hope you'll enjoy these two brilliant individuals as much as I did listening to them. I learned so much in this podcast each week, and I learned how I can actually be part of the solution. They're giving you a chance to be part of the solution moving forward, working with some brilliant people. And that's the least we can do. So let's go to that conversation now. I know you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Another week on the Way Home podcast, and not one, but two amazing guests. We're going to have three, but our third guest is down and out, not feeling so well. But we have two amazing guests with us. Khalood, Andrea, welcome once again to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Great to have you here. And I think, you have so much knowledge, no pressure, but I'm going to ask you this question, and it's actually kind of personal, so there's no right or wrong. Andrea, we'll start with you, then go to Khalood. And that is, what does home mean to you?
Oh, that's such a great question. Yeah, well, I think it's changed over time. When I was younger, I lived in some pretty precarious situations, and I think home was where I felt safe. So like a very base level understanding of home. Now I think home is where I not only feel safe, but where I can connect to a community in a way on my terms, right? So I'm not having to like fit myself into a community to find a home, but I'm able to participate in what that community looks like and how I'm building it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Khalid, what about you? What does home mean to you?
I think for me as well, the understanding and definitions have changed and have so much more increasingly been informed by the work that I've been doing with the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network. So I think more and more for me, how I understand home is a place where I can exist with dignity and feel safe and feel in control and autonomous of my life and the decisions that I'm trying to make. And I think as a woman of color, these are things that are so critical and important to me. And a space that holds that for me is home. And that's how I'm understanding home as I'm doing this work more and more. And as it informs the way that I live and the way that I do things.
Beautiful. And a very nice segue into our next question. And we'll stick with you for a minute. And just, you're well known in this sector, but for those who might not know you, can you talk a little bit about your journey, what you're willing to share into the work that you're doing now? And then we'll go to Andrea.
Absolutely. So I work with the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network. Formerly, my title is Director of Policy and Community Engagement. A lot of my work focuses on doing advocacy and bringing awareness around housing impacts of housing insecurity and homelessness on women and gender diverse people, focusing on what housing trajectories look like for women and gender diverse people across Canada, and how policy and plans and legislation can do a better job of protecting this group of people. So that's in a nutshell what I do. And then it's the work in itself exists in partnerships and collaborations. So the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network is this web of partnerships and collaborations with academics and organizations, service providers, people with lived experience, community advocates, so on and so forth. So it's a really awesome space where people come together and think through gender equity in housing.
Incredible, and you know, so relevant to what we're talking, the work we're going to talk about today. Andrea?
Wow, and super well summarized, Khalid. I'm feeling like I would like to give a nutshell. I'm not sure that I can. The shortest answer I can give is that I have a pretty sprawling set of paid work, volunteer work, community work, passions that I pursue and have pursued throughout my life. A lot of time, I think I'd probably characterize them as imperatives for survival when I was younger. And all of that sort of has balled up together into work I'm doing right now for a number of organizations, but including an organization called the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing. And so through that, I've been helping them, supporting them to build some power through providing the tools, skills, knowledge, pathways that women and gender diverse people with lived experience of homelessness or housing precarity, whatever tool it is that they need to be able to feel confident about using their voice to talk about the experiences that they've had. So I bring into this my own experience of homelessness, my own experience of housing precarity. I have a trans kid, so watching their experience as a 20-something trying to navigate the Vancouver housing market, as well as I was elected to public office in Vancouver for 4 terms at the local government level and worked as an advocate and activist and community organizer. So trying to ball that all up together to provide the tools that folks need to really propel a voice that has just been completely sidelined in. We finally convinced governments there is a housing crisis, but the people who are living at the very front line of that are often ignored or erased altogether.
Well said. Often when I talk to people who have worked in public service before, they describe themselves as survivors of public service for you. And I say so often when you do the work that we do and you're talking about housing, et cetera, people will say, well, have you ever considered running for it? And my answer is absolutely not. But I admire those who do because it is you know, tough work. Not easy. So you both bring just a wealth of experience. Let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about the agenda, let's talk about why is it important to have a gender lens on homelessness? Do we need to do that? I think the answer is yes, but I want you to tell me more. And either or, you can decide who wants to jump in on that.
Yeah, well, Khalid, why don't I jump in? And then, because I feel like you have such a great segue into the agenda itself. I'll full disclosure, in the time that I was in elected office, well, I was, you know, my own background of being homeless and living very much on the thin line of precarity in housing, both as a mother and a single person before that, housing was a very front and center issue for me. I mean, well before I think it really hit the mainstream consciousness, really fighting for us to understand that in Vancouver and to try to get ahead of what was clearly a global wave coming at us that has since hit Canada and Vancouver. But within that, I'm embarrassed to say that, you know, while I understood women and gender diverse people had specific needs, we didn't have specific strategies for them, because in the 2000s and 2010s, the view of homelessness was based on homelessness counts, which were such a great innovation in the early 2000s, right? But who we're counting is the people who can afford to be visible on the streets, which seems so crazy, right? In this context, this hierarchy of extreme environments that people are in, that there's some people who are, it is so dangerous for them to be seen as homeless that we're not even seeing them. And so therefore we're not coming up with strategies for them. And I was working with Pan-Canadian Voice. One of the projects we did was a podcast. It's got 8 episodes and it's called She, They, Us. And within that, the stories of people, I talked to 30 plus women and gender diverse people. Collectively, we have had to move over 1,000 times, the 30 plus people, myself and the others. Not one of us at any point in our lives has ever been counted in a homeless count, despite the obvious need that we have, right? And so it's sort of this weird intersection of low wages, low power, misogyny, discrimination, gender-based violence, transphobia, and then also we have to make ourselves invisible just to survive. So then our chances of getting help are even lower.
Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that, Andrea, and thank you for sharing your own experience, which I think is the most powerful channel for women and gender diverse people to talk about their housing insecurity and homelessness, because you're so right. All of the work that we do at the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network points to this, that women and gender diverse people are so invisibilized when it comes to their homelessness or housing insecurity experiences that it's very difficult to exactly pinpoint what gender trajectories might look like just looking at available data or statistics. So what we heavily rely on is stories and narratives and sharing circles and you know, community conversations and dialogues where women and gender diverse people are able to come together, sit down and actually speak to what their experiences are. And what we find, I think, at a very baseline is when a woman is in crisis, there's very few places that she or they consider to be safe for them to go and find respite and find safety. We know that emergency shelters in most cities across Canada tend to be co-ed. They're not necessarily gender specific. They don't offer the kind of safety that women are looking for, especially if they're with kids, especially if they are already fleeing a violent circumstance and are trying to leave that behind. You know, and then on top of that, spaces that are available can sometimes be very limited, over capacity, sometimes be high barrier. So certain women with complex challenges might not be able to access them. And then, of course, there is the fear of surveillance and institutionalization where you're worried about losing your kids and you're worried about child apprehension systems. So you furthermore feel safe invisibilizing yourself. So when we talk about gender trajectories through housing insecurity or homelessness, we're really talking about how multiple systems interact to create points of extreme marginalization and vulnerability for people that are seeking safety and seeking alternatives to whatever situation they're currently in. And then furthermore, now we're in environments where, you know, there are women or gender diverse people who exercise their agency and set up a tent for themselves and set up some semblance of a home. And now we're seeing extreme punitive measures towards tearing those down, or, you know, taking those away and not respecting people's belongings and not respecting people's space. So where do people go? They really, the only option available to them is to hide and be invisible, to find a shelter for night, to rely on something like survival sex or stay with somebody that can exchange shelter for sexual favors or whatever else that might look like. It's just so precarious and so vulnerable, the stage to be in. And that's this full story that we're trying to bring to the fore.
Amazing. And thank you for doing that. And thank you both for sharing. Let's talk about the intersectional feminist housing agenda. And apologize if you have to repeat any of, but talk me through the process. How did we get to where we are here? How it came about? What does it include?
Do you want to start, Andrea?
Well, Khalid, I feel like you have you had more of a front row seat on this one. So I'd love to hear that. I feel like, yeah, I'll do my best if I feel like you're not going to leave blanks, but maybe I can add some color commentary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Please do. I'm always cautious of speaking too much. So anyways, I'll start off with actually what kind of planted the seeds for the idea was the coming together of the Women's National Housing and Homelessness folks and the Pan-Canadian Voice on Women's Housing folks at this annual symposium that's hosted by the Pan-Canadian Voice on Women's Housing. And it's an amazing, awesome space attended by many advocates and people with lived expertise. And it's just a knowledge sharing space of where people get an opportunity to talk about what they're seeing in their communities and what the path to action looks like. And our discussion really quickly crystallized that we really need a collective voice of women and gender diverse people, in housing spaces, in housing sector, to come together and say, what do solutions look like for us and on our terms and articulated by us? So that's where the idea started taking shape. And then we're really lucky at both of the networks at the Pan-Canadian and at Women's Network to have advisory committees and lived experience led committees that, you know, come together and shape what the national agenda could look like. So we pitched these ideas to our respective committees. There was a lot of yay and sign on for it. We hosted office hours and conversation circles for people to just tune in whenever they have capacity and give us input to what are the most urgent things that they want to see happen in their communities. And like with anything else that's such a layered socioeconomic issue, housing is so multi-layered and so that people see working in their community. So there's no one answer and there's no one way to go about it. And whatever folks are seeing in their communities, they think that the solution for that is the absolute most important and most urgent. So the challenge always is, how do you take something that is truly collective, that truly believes in consensus building, and you put it together in a format that is policy smart and has, you know, efficacy and usability in different policy and decision-making circles. So that was the challenge that we were up against. We're so blessed to have such an engaged group of people who represent so many different regions and so many different walks of this housing sector that came together and provided us that input. There were multiple iterations and corrections, and we eventually got to an agenda that we thought was succinct and offered many point form solutions which can individually stand and move the dial on housing outcomes for women and gender diverse people. And that's what we ended up with. And that's what we were hoping is going to be read and mobilized across Canada at different levels of government. There's some, it's written to the federal government, but there really is a movement and action for all levels of government to be involved from now until whatever the future looks like. Our hope is that people can just take the agenda to a local decision maker and talk to them about it and talk to why gendered solutions are so critical in this current housing crisis that we're in. But that's really the gist of what we tried to do with the intersectional feminist housing agenda.
Construct, a social enterprise by Blue Door, provides high-quality residential and commercial construction and property services in the Greater Toronto Area. More than a business with a heart, Construct is a real solution to preventing and ending homelessness. Through its 8-week paid skills trades training program, complete with wraparound supports and on-the-job work experience, Construct lifts people out of poverty and into opportunity. To hire Construct for your next project or learn more about Construct's employment program, visit constructgta.ca.
All right, cool. Now, I saw in some of the materials that I read, you were taking that to the federal government in December, right? Is that true?
We have been mobilizing it. We've done this letter campaign, and I really wish Stefania was here who could speak to this in a lot more detail. But we've so far written letters to the Minister of Housing and the Minister of Status of Women and Gender Equity. We're also encouraging people to write to their local representatives to take the agenda to them. I think we're slowly moving to success. We haven't really heard back from the Minister of Housing or the Minister of Wage yet, but we're hopeful and we're going to keep going. And the goal really is to get eventually some form of a roundtable where we can invite the advocates in the room to be speaking to the agenda and to be talking to the minister. So we really, really want to see the agenda be used and utilized in decision making and in informing decisions federally. So that's the goal, and we're slowly working our way towards that.
Andrea, anything to add at all?
Yeah, well, I thought that was a great summary. I think like what twigged for me as you were talking, Khalid, and they're like embedded into the work from day one, but I think maybe helpful for listeners to know the whole point here, like the symposium's been happening since 2017. It was a response. As folks may remember, Stephen Harper in his time as prime minister was not very focused on housing. We had a change in national government in 2015 who had more of an interest in housing. So things started, you know, shifting. But Janice Abbott, who's a real towering figure in the world of women's housing and gender, thinking about gender when we're thinking about services, she was like, you know, we have been so busy just fighting off devastation that we just haven't had time to imagine a future. So what if we could all get together, women, gender diverse folks, and imagine what hope looks like? What is a hopeful future? And that, so that's the roots of the symposium. And it just speaks so much to me as I hear you talking, Khalid. I didn't get to go to the symposium this year, but like, if women and gender diverse people don't have spaces where we can talk and imagine and hope, and also talk about our fears and frustrations, anger, and just our experiences, this is not possible. But it speaks so much to why we need this agenda and why it's so important. There was a housing announcement here in Vancouver a few weeks ago that I called them announcement, because everyone on the stage, I mean, you've got a guy prime minister, you've got two guys who are housing ministers nationally and provincially, you've got a guy who's a mayor. And it's not to say they can't imagine the experiences of women, but they can do that because we get together and figure out a way to amplify our voices. And that's why it's so important, this work.
Absolutely.
And well said. Thank you both. You talked about, Khalid, you kind of touched on the partners. Tell me more about who are the partners involved?
So we have the agenda that was co-released by the Pan-Canadian Voice on Women's Housing, the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network. And then the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network works really closely with our sister network, who's the National Indigenous Housing Network. And the three of us got together and we put together this agenda. And then each of us have steering committees that are represented by service providers, organizations. We were able to get some asks that were specific to the urban, northern, and rural Indigenous strategy. We were able to echo those from NICHI, that's doing some really critical, great work right now on getting housing built and developed for urban, rural, Indigenous, northern communities. We were able to echo some work and some voices from Make the Shift and some of the work that they've done around specifically around financialization and addressing that. There was some critical work that we also involved and included from other partners that are on the ground that are providing low barrier transitional housing, that are providing low barrier shelters and spaces, include and involve their voices. So there really was an array of voices. And then we have just community advocates and lived experts that sit on these tables and bring a wealth of experience navigating systems themselves and helping other people navigate systems. So I really feel like those voices are so critical because they highlight the invisible and they talk about the invisible. And that's where specific policy interventions or solutions can be built, where, you know, there are experiences that have not been acknowledged or not currently acknowledged in policy solutions. So it's really an array and mix of voices that are working at different levels in the housing sector, that are involved in the community, that are involved with service provision, that are involved in research and academia. And we have those voices represented in our steering committees and in the membership that was involved in putting this together.
You know, it's interesting for when you talk about government and Andrea being part of government before. Sometimes what I find, especially with federal government, is they can only hold one or two ideas in their mind at the same time, right? Now, and it's not a criticism because you've got multiple things going on, right? And for the longest time as advocates, we hammered home housing first. People started to get, and that was the solution to everything. Housing first, great. I can understand that. People were talking about, hey, you know, we also need to talk about prevention. You can't end homelessness if you don't prevent it from happening in the first place. Okay, can I get that? And then we need an Indigenous strategy, which we absolutely do, separate from, and so there's all these different pieces, right? And we've seen that too. We've seen just looping around to the ruling around encampments, saying you can't just say we have a shelter space for people to go to. There's a variety of needs that have to match the individual's needs that if you want to support them in their housing journey. People are having a tough time. We're kind of a society that always looks for that. Let's get everyone, you know, through the same kind of box, the same system, right? And I hear what you're saying here too. Like the needs of women and homelessness and precarious housing are different, right? And take different solutions. What has the response been so far? And what have your, as you're introducing this, has it been welcomed? Are you hopeful?
Yeah, I mean, as Khalid was saying, like the government response, and not surprising, I mean, we released it in December and tends to be a time, especially in non-election years, where governments maybe take an opportunity to have a break. And I don't begrudge them that. I will say up front, after COVID, anyone who was governing during COVID, I can imagine them being extremely tired at this point. But I think we'll see some more traction over the coming weeks. One of the really exciting things, we put it out there to partner networks. We had over 80 endorsers in like 2 weeks, which was... I don't know, it's like giving me goosebumps just to say that, to realize, like, you know, when you work in this area and you've tried to have this discussion for many years, kind of realizing, oh my God, I think we've hit a tipping point where people, Michael, I think you articulated it really well, are understanding that it's hard to have collective answers to individual experiences, but we need to be able to do that. Because those individual experiences were often created by deficiencies in our collective response, right? Whether that's colonization or one-size approaches that advantage certain folks, certain genders, certain ethnic backgrounds, et cetera. And so I think we're getting better at holding complexity in our heads. I do think what we're asking for from government is hard. I'm not going to say it's not. But I think them not acting is a lot harder. I think we're seeing it playing out every single day in our streets, in our workplaces, in our families, in our extended networks. And that, yeah, I think this is one of the great challenges of all.
Khalid, you mentioned before some of your hopes, and you mentioned you mentioned what success looks like, right? So what is that? Like, you mentioned policy changes. If we were to look 6 months, a year down the line, and for you to say, go back to all your partners and to say, this is success, what would you be talking about? What would it look like? What would you say, like, we've hit the mark and we're on to something here?
The cool thing about the agenda is that it does assign some form of like a sense of time to what success can look like in the now, in the medium term, and then in the long term. So it really does kind of can be used as a way to indicate success. Now, I do, just being realistic and knowing what we know that our ideal times and our ideal aspirations are not what are going to conspire. So I think that what success can look like is some form of commitment, whether that is through reflections in budgets, whether that is through reflections in, you know, there, I know that there is the upcoming review of the National Housing Strategy on the table, like seeing the agenda reflected through those policy pieces or those decisions, that's what success can look like for us. We call for significant investments in social housing, where we've echoed calls from this other housing and social housing and human rights campaign. Seeing that commitment would look like success. Seeing a strengthening of the really lacking income support infrastructure in Canada currently, seeing those rates go up would look like success. Seeing some form of commitment to just overall strengthening of income supports infrastructure in Canada would look like success. Better national standards around tenant protections can look like success. Like, there really is so much, Michael, that is there to grasp and work on, like, tomorrow, if there is the will, to say that we've succeeded. What I'm really hoping is that's what we get to see with this agenda being taken up at different levels of government. Like, there's many areas that are right now, like Andrea articulated, leading to systemic deficits that are leading to these crises in our communities. And some of them really just are a political will thing, where we can just kind of make a decision and move towards that. Like, I can say, for example, better protections against evictions are going to make a huge difference for women and gender diverse people who are losing their housing currently. And this is directly from a survey that the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network conducted. Women, one of the major leading causes for women to lose their housing is their breakup with their partners, because security of tenure is just something that's so lacking and absent for women in relationships. So could there be better solutions for women to keep their housing in case of them, you know, breaking up or leaving the relationship or having to, you know, get away from an abusive partner? These are things we can really put our heads together and think about. And I'm positive that people have already thought about this and there are solutions on the table. We just need commitment. So I think that success is at once very within reach and tangible. And yet, you know, like the distance and that we have to travel is this lack of, like, sometimes political will, and then maybe some other challenges and consensus building at different levels of government. But we have to commit to it. And that's what the agenda hopes to do, is to get some commitments from folks that these are areas that are important for us. And these are areas that we want to work on right now.
Yeah. And I think, thank you for that. And I think I know the answer to this too. How can people get involved? I mean, if we want to make things important, we absolutely can. If we want government to listen, you have, I mean, government responds to the people's will, right? In a sense, to what's going to get them reelected, right or wrong. But I think that's what you talked a little bit about in the beginning of, you know, what you're hoping for people's voices. But how can people support this? How can people push this agenda and really get the ear of government to move it forward?
Khalid, do you want me to jump in? All right. Well, so if you go to womenshomelessness.ca, you will see there a link off the front page for the Intersectional Feminist Housing Agenda. If you scroll down a little bit, you get a chance to read the agenda, and then we're asking people to endorse the agenda. And I'll give you a bit of a preview that for International Women's Day this year on March 8th, we're really asking organizations to consider making housing the focus for it. Because just like every gender, if you don't have a safe place to live, it's very hard to build other aspects of your life out, whether it's education or work or personal fulfillment of any kind becomes very difficult to achieve if you're in insecure housing. So really asking people to consider this. One thing I might also add, and this has been a challenge for feminism and feminists is that when we've made calls around women in particular, it tends to be white women and upper middle class white women who have benefited from those calls on the whole. So really asking people to strongly invest in the intersectional feminist agenda that's here, that it is Indigenous women, it's women living with disabilities, it's gender diverse women, it's trans women, it's women of color, it's Black women, who are really living at the front lines of this crisis, and that we need to be prepared to hold that. This isn't just about one gender or another. It's about the reality of power and how power moves within society, and thinking about who doesn't have it and where are we putting our resources first to support people accessing more equity.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Andrea. And I'll quickly actually add, I really feel like the power of the agenda is in the endorsements and in the number of people talking about it and thinking and pushing the importance and urgency of it. So like Andrea said, we are doing this big push leading up to the Women's Day in March, hoping that we can get more folks talking about it, more folks writing to their elected representatives, and just overall making solutions and aspirations in the agenda part of their conversations on Women's Day. I also just wanted to say that so many of the points in the agenda are advocacy calls from organizations that have been leading their own campaigns for years and years and years. And that work in itself stands on such solid ground. So at the end of the day, the power of the agenda is in this collective advocacy that so many groups have been doing for years, sitting at the intersection of different vulnerabilities and marginalizations experienced by women and gender diverse people. So the depth of the intersectionality of the agenda stands on the shoulders of a lot of folks that have been talking about these solutions for years. So really, we're not seeing anything new. I think what's really transformative about the agenda is it's bringing those voices together, and it's creating a push for urgency and immediacy in responses.
And Stronger Together, give us that website one more time where people can go. And I'm assuring, like, you make it so simple for people to have a voice. It's not complicated.
It's womenshomelessness.ca, Michael. And if they are just on the homepage, they can scroll down and there is the intersectional feminist housing agenda. And you click on that and it takes you on a page that'll have everything that you need to know and need to do about the agenda. So it's super simple. It's just two clicks away. And if they kind of follow us or join our mailing list, there's going to be ongoing updates around what's happening with the agenda and what are opportunities to get involved.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, both of you, for driving this forward. Definitely needed. And I think, you know, the more voices we get attached to this, pushing this forward, making it the conversation to have, the stronger it will be. Before we go, just tell me a little bit, each of you, if you tell me a little bit, this is a piece of what you do. You're doing many different things. This is your chance to plug your other work and your organizations.
Yeah, why don't I start, Khalid, and you can round us out. So I feel compelled to talk about the podcast, but I was thinking about it while we were talking about the agenda. We're kind of assuming your listeners are like, yes, I totally get this, and I'm ready to sign on. If this is a new issue that you haven't, like, intuitively maybe you get it, but you're interested in learning more about the specific impacts on women and gender diverse people and their families, that's what the podcast She They Us, put out by the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing, is all about. So we have a first episode where we do a reality check and talk to academics and researchers and kind of like who I think we traditionally think of as experts. And then we go from there into, we've got 5 episodes that are talking to, I would consider the real experts, the women and gender diverse people living on those front lines, and hearing from folks who are those intersectional identities coming together into this housing crisis and hearing how that's impacting them. And then we have 2 episodes of solutions, so that there are some pretty challenging stories in that podcast, but I think all the more reason the courage that those folks show to speak about them, I think, is really important. And then that podcast exists because we've been supporting through Pan-Canadian Voice We refer to them as the Army of Women and Gender Diverse People to help them tell their stories. So if you go to the Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing website, what you'll see there are resources that you can use if you're looking for support to tell your story and who you should talk to about your story of housing and homelessness and housing precarity. The resources are there.
Amazing. I actually want to double plug the podcast because it's such an amazing resource, the She, They, Us podcast, for folks that are trying to understand what do we exactly mean by gender and housing equity and how does it manifest in policy solutions and what does it exactly mean people navigating different systems. So listening to people's stories is what makes everything that we're seeing more powerful. And I really would double plug that podcast. I'll also actually quickly add, Michael, that we are doing the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network, together with the National Indigenous Housing Network, is really working right now on mobilizing the upcoming human rights panel that's going to be hosted by the National Housing Council. And it's going to be this national review panel on human rights violations, particularly focusing on government's failure to end to eliminate homelessness for women and gender diverse people. And it's really an opportunity for everyone across Canada to be involved in telling stories, presenting evidence and gathering like data around what they're seeing in their communities, what are they impacted by, and putting it forth to a human rights process that's going to present recommendations out of it to the Minister of Housing. It's under the National Housing Strategy Act, which is the Housing as a Human Right Act in Canada. And it's a really important and powerful mechanism for folks all across Canada to claim their right to housing. So the Women's National Housing and Homelessness Network, we have our eyes set to this review panel. We're helping anybody that's interested in mobilizing and joining and submitting to the review panel. Again, you can just get in touch with us through our website, our emails there, our contact info is there, and we will get back to you and we will help anybody that's interested in doing submissions to get their submission submitted. So it's a powerful accountability mechanism for what we're seeing in our communities. And it's just another little plug to all of the work that we're doing.
I love that accountability piece. I mean, often when we talk about the right to housing and housing is a human right, people are like, so what? Like, what, you know, what, how do you get some teeth to actually realizing that right? And if I hear you correctly, that's exactly like, let's do that and make sure people can recognize that and realize that right for sure. You're both doing impactful, life-changing, important work. And I appreciate so much you taking the time out of your busy schedules to join me today. Now, I could tell, Andrea, you've got a podcast set up there. Sound is fantastic. So I tell, listen, go listen to this podcast. I assume anywhere you find podcasts, you can find the podcast.
Yeah, it's Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud. One thing I will say, if I had to name it again, love the name, very hard to find when you're searching. So Pan-Canadian Voice for Women's Housing is a better way to find the podcast than She, They, Us.
That's awesome, but I hear you. Often we, for this podcast, we direct people to the website rather than trying to find it on their own. And Clute, I'll say this. I'm looking at your headset. That to me looks like a government-issued headset. So you've done, usually when you are speaking with government, they ask you to come on and do it, some kind of deputation. They'll ask you, what headset do you have? And then they send one to you because they don't believe you could actually do that on your own. And that red cord, I recognize. Is that right?
I have to say, I'm using my partner's.
Ah, see, yeah. And that's, I bet that's where they sent me one before. And my partner actually took the one I got. Like that for sure, because those are good headsets. Listen, thank you so much. We're gonna make sure this drops before March 8th so everyone can get behind this. And I encourage our listeners to do just that. Any of the work that you're doing, if you ever want to get it out to our sector and share it widely, you're welcome back. Just say the word. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer.
And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com. Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.